Last July, Ukraine's deep-sea maritime trade dried up with the collapse of the Black Sea Initiative. Within days, Ukraine put forward a proposal to the IMO detailing a route that would see ships sailing through Romanian waters to reach the greater Odessa ports. In August, Ukraine announced the opening of a so-called humanitarian corridor, pitching the route as a way to evacuate ships that, at the time, had been stranded for over a year in Ukrainian territory. The initial departures were indeed stuck ships, but in September, the first vessel started to arrive from foreign markets, and the so-called New Black Sea Corridor was officially open for business. Since then, over 1,000 ships have exported nearly 30 million tons from Ukraine, helping to fuel the country's wartime economy and putting large quantities of desperately needed grain back on the market. In February, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg attributed the opening of the corridor to Ukraine's armed forces, who have been remarkably successful at pushing Russia's Black Sea fleet further away from its coasts. "Few believe this was possible just a few months ago," he said. "But now, actually, the export of grain from Ukraine takes place even without an agreement with Russia. So this shows the skills and the competence of the Ukrainian armed forces." Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has reinforced the importance of the country's military in the functioning of the corridor, and has warned that Ukraine will struggle to defend the route without additional military aid from the US. While the US announced an additional package for Ukraine worth up to $300 million earlier this week, the Department of Defense's supplemental request, which includes roughly $60 billion in military aid, is still yet to be passed by Congress. Ian Ralby, CEO of IR Consilium, a family-run maritime and resource security consultancy, agrees that additional aid is critical for the maritime corridor given the role the armed forces play in its operation.
The military is heavily involved in working to continue to defend this particular route. And the requirements for doing so are becoming more extreme as the more or less randomized bombardment from the Russians continues and creates an uncertain condition for how safe any kind of passage would be. Ukrainians are working really hard, particularly at aerial defense, to knock down all of the drones, including a heavy number of Shahid drones from Iran gifted to or purchased from to aid the Russian effort. And that is creating a real challenge. So without continuing to bolster, not just maintain, but bolster their aerial defenses, the Ukrainian armed forces aren't going to be able to maintain this corridor long term. The other problem is that there is a surface-related concern, and so they need to make sure that the territorial sea remains safe from Russian incursion, and that requires constantly pushing outwards as well. And so that's being done often with drones, and we've seen just in the last few days continued success on the Ukrainian front to not just push back, but actually go back quite successfully, undermining the mighty Russian Black Sea fleet and reducing it to a much more tame adversary. But that doesn't mean that the threat is decreasing because of this aerial assault.
Importantly, Ukraine isn't working in isolation and is being supported by allies and in particular the Romanians, who helped establish the corridor and continue to support in maintaining safety for those sailing to Ukraine's seaports. But another critical element, outside of military considerations, that has allowed the Green Corridor to flourish is the availability of affordable insurance.
Ukraine's been very, very vocal in its encouragement of vessels to actually take on the risk of leaving their ports. And Western-based insurers have been willing to back them in this. And that's quite a big one. Companies like Marsh and Lloyds, who have been more than willing to actually give shipping companies relatively good insurance rates for leaving and departing these ports.
That was Callum Thompson, senior associate at Black Sea Associates, who adds that other practical considerations, such as improvement to infrastructure, increased number of pilots, and the introduction of a 24-hour sailing period through the corridor, are also contributing to its success. But the insurance angle can't be stressed enough. There are always going to be shippers willing to take on riskier trades, but it's absolutely essential that they have the insurance backing to make this happen.
It is because generally hull machinery would be the purview of Holland writers, but when there is a conflict zone and the Ukraine conflict has made the Black Sea a listed area under the Joint War Committee, so that top up of war cover is essential, and the price is here is a big factor now. The work of the mark at the UN is to lower the prices, to remove those frictional costs, so that commercial shipping, in particular to the grain, fertilizer, and humanitarian goods, can move in and out without that additional friction. So all the work with the UN that Lloyds and the market have been doing is to try and get those rates down, those additional premiums. So that's a key factor. You know, again, geopolitical side would suggest the naval force is doing a great job in protecting the corridor and keeping that maintained is a factor. But the work that the UN and this sector have been doing is going to be critical to incentivize insurers to reduce prices, which will then motivate and increase momentum for commercial shipping to go in and support the Ukraine.
That was Chris Pober, head of sanctions advisory at Lloyd's of London, who further argues that the current situation, from an insurance point of view, does suggest that Ukraine's corridor is sustainable.
Insurers are still providing cover to commercial shipping, in particular for the war risks that are needed to enter, transit, and exit the Black Sea. So it's, you know, we are there, we have the appetite, we have the capacity, and that's there. And I think the data that Noiseless Intelligence have provided us directly, you know, since Q4 2023, it does demonstrate that the combined seaports and the Danube Delta arrivals are increasing since Q4. So since the grain deal was paused in July. So that evidence is clearly there. So it is sustainable. And insurers continue to collaborate with themselves, with the UN, with governments in particular, to create various facilities that are guaranteed by certain Ukraine banks in terms of letters of credits as a guarantee for losses. So with all that in play, you know, the support that the Ukrainians are getting should demonstrate that this corridor can be sustained.
Let's get back to the security situation in the Black Sea, because realistically, any change in Russian behavior or increased aggression would force underwriters to recalibrate risk, potentially leading to cover being pulled or feasibly becoming very expensive. It's not without precedent for Russians to attack ships involved in Ukrainian trade. Shortly after Russia withdrew from the UN-brokered grain deal in July, it warned that ships heading to Ukraine's Black Sea ports could be targeted. In August, the Russian Navy fired warning shots and boarded general cargo ship Sukhruo Khan while it was en route to one of Ukraine's Danube River ports. In November, the bulk carrier K-Max Ruler was attacked on its approach to the deep sea port of Yuzhny. But why hasn't there been an incident in several months? Part of it is down to the timing of the opening of the corridor, with it coming after several successful naval campaigns on Ukraine's part that have pushed Russia's navy further away from the sailing zones, says geopolitical analyst Yorick Ishik.
Right now, all Russian vessels, as we speak, as we can prove this directly from satellite pictures, they are back in their bases. They took a couple opportunity moments. As I mentioned, they have some fast corvettes. At the very beginning of the when Ukraine established a naval route from the very extreme Western Black Sea, they attempted to board a vessel. And after that, there have been some mine incidents that the Russian naval aviation were dropping explosive devices, probably very old mines. You know, with the they will know where the currents are correct, that it will go and create chaos and some kind of threat to the vessels working both into the mainland ports of Ukraine and also the ports, the, you know, Ukrainian ports in the Danube. And we have several incidents that, you know, you and I, we closely follow throughout the last 6 months, and some vessels got slightly damaged. And but you know, there is, even for the Ukraine and Russian naval aviation, there are limited opportunities. These skies are closely watched by NATO and by the forces are present there. By U.S. planes, by Royal Air Force planes, and currently, like, Turkish Air Force is covering entire Romanian skies. And so it's not easy for Russian Air Force to operate in these places. Also, Ukraine is using the weapons transfer to Ukraine very creatively, as we see that several, you know, Russian AVAX planes even, and, you know, they've been brought down with weapons not necessarily designed to bring to planes down.
There are several other explanations for Russia's relative lack of aggression against ships sailing the Black Sea route, which includes the fact that the very nature of the corridor is a pretty effective deterrent.
Well, I think their efforts to try to seem or sound legal somewhat mitigates the likelihood of them going hardcore after another vessel. The other thing is, once a vessel is in the waters of the territorial sea of Turkey, Bulgaria, or Romania, if they attack it, that is a violation of NATO's jurisdiction. And so that would be a pretty risky approach to trying to interfere with maritime commerce, because they would not really enjoy, I think, being on the really uncertain end of how Article 5 would be interpreted under those circumstances. So that may be mitigating their decision making at the same time. The other thing is, Russia, despite its flagrant disregard for what we often term the rules-based order, a frequently derided concept, they nevertheless do appreciate the free flow of maritime commerce. They need it. So they rely on it as well. And so there's a mitigating factor insofar as they perhaps do not want to open the door to further disruptions of their own goods moving elsewhere. And so, you know, their economy has not suffered as much as we have wanted and tried for it to. And so maybe there's a calculus for them that actually allowing for some of the free flow of maritime commerce into and out of Ukraine allows for them to continue to exist financially.
While incidents involving actively sailing ships has been limited, and analysts aren't anticipating this to change drastically anytime soon, Russia continues to pose a threat and disrupt operations in other, sometimes more subtle, ways.
Mine ships can often, you know, floating mines are always a risk, and can, you know, you can have a slight diminishment of accountability in that aspect, and that, you know, it's not something that you actively control. You can just sort of mine the region, but they're not going to be actively mining NATO waters. If anything, it'll be laying them outside and hoping that they float within them. But then again, you've got agreements between Turkey, Bulgaria, Romania to demine the Black Sea. Those have been ongoing anyway. There was a more recent agreement that came out, which just kind of formalizes that a little bit.
What Russia did most successfully to not to stop it, but to slow down the grain route, the Ukraine's new naval route, was actually on land, not on the sea, and that is hitting the civilian infrastructure, especially in Odessa. Since the naval route was initiated, well above 200, possibly 200, 250 different civilian infrastructure was successfully targeted by Russia. So obviously that's causing delays in the port, and, you know, it's causing capacity issues. So the vessels, I think the biggest risk comes when they're in the port, when the civilian port facilities are under attack. But otherwise on the sea, the trade continues, the route continues, the traffic remains open. And in Bosphorus, we see every day more and more ships coming from the ports of Ukraine, traveling to all different parts of the world.
Analysts point out that besides direct Russian attacks against infrastructure and deliberate interference with the grain supply chain, the very situation that we are in because of the war could mean that even though the corridor is viable and it is feasible for vessels to pass in and out, that there simply might not be the supply to keep maritime traffic at these high levels.
There are other, you know, factors, not just within, if hypothetically Russia would decide to strike. Ukrainian grain production and crop yields are predicted to be down by the summer, quite badly as well. I think the occupied regions, Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporozhye, and Kherson, I think I read somewhere that that's about 7.5% of Ukrainian cropland is currently abandoned or unusable just due to unexploded munitions, chemical contamination. So whether or not, you know, we do see, because right now I think the export levels are almost back to pre-war levels. Whether or not we see a drop-off in the summer just due to slightly less crop yields or anything like that could be a factor as well.
Ultimately, Ukraine's armed forces do play a critical role in the functioning of the corridor, and it's not a far cry to say that without additional and continued assistance from its allies, the maritime corridor is certainly at risk.
Where things stand now is that global shipping is under a lot of intense pressure. The Red Sea situation gets worse by the day. The Panama Canal being at historically low water levels is creating a critical challenge there. And with the Black Sea becoming potentially another question mark again as things ebb and flow, and as we see more activity on the maritime domain of the Black Sea, it just means that the extent of vigilance by the shipping world is at an all-time high, perhaps. And I think that we're going to see an increasingly challenging set of decisions for ship owners to determine whether they want to risk the lives of seafarers, risk the loss of vessels, risk the loss of cargo. But for now, the Ukrainians and the Romanians are doing quite a good job. And so until there's a shift in the context for maritime commerce, as opposed to the naval piece, which has shifted this week with the sinking of another Russian ship, then there is probably no big change on the immediate horizon. But if the Ukrainians are not supported enough to continue to provide the safety for the vessels coming into and out of Ukrainian ports, there could be a change in the situation, which could precipitate other challenges in terms of, again, you know, back to questions about food supply and food flow, especially given the challenge of access to the Red Sea right now.